This is the American Soccer News Network.
All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of Midnight Ride. This is Hank Alexander, once again, joined by my colleagues from New England Soccer Today, Mr. Sean Donahue. How you doing today, Sean?
Good. How are you doing, Hank?
Great, thanks. And we got Brian O'Connell as well. How are you, Brian?
How's it going, Hank?
Great, man. Welcome back and Happy New Year to both of you guys. It's been an interesting offseason so far with, you know, the supplemental draft and, the expansion draft and the re-entry draft, and we've had all sorts of drafts so far this season, and it's wrapped up with basically the MLS Super Draft, which was held last Thursday, and then tomorrow we'll see the supplemental draft, and this is something that they used to do a while back. They got rid of it. They added more rounds into the Super Draft, and then I guess they just decided that was too much, so they broke it back down into three rounds in the Super Draft. And then do we know how many rounds are in the supplemental draft, or is it just...
I believe it's three as well.
Three rounds in the... And that's going to be basically a big conference call, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
And so that's tomorrow, and when the teams will basically pick up any remaining players. And, you know, it used to be a good way to pick up some good talent on the cheap. The Revs once picked out a guy named Jeff Lorenowitz out of the supplemental draft, and he turned out to be a real find. He's now, I think he was training with the United States national team. I don't know if he's still there, but he now MLS Cup winner with Colorado Rapids. So,
of course, Andy Dorman taking the sixth round of the Super Draft, which would be the supplemental draft today, too. So
there you go. So, lots of opportunity there for teams to pick up a key component, you know, maybe an offensive threat. You never know. But so the Revs had I think they had the most picks out of any team. They had five picks in the Super Draft last Thursday, which was held down in Baltimore. And both of you guys went down on the Revs bus. Is that right?
Yes,
you're dead.
All right, let's hear it. What was the Revs fan bus like at 1 a.m. at Riverside? Come on.
Yeah, it was surprisingly quiet, I have to say. It was surprisingly quiet, but I think that's more attributable to the fact that it was 1 a.m. and I think, you know, a few people had come in from, you know, more than 20 miles away. So, when you combine that and probably all of us had to do some shoveling at some point during that day, thanks to that massive snowstorm we got.
That's right.
It was surprisingly subdued, I got to say. But but yeah, either that or they were just saving their energy for the draft, because honestly, they really put on a good show. Made the Revolution fan base look really, really good during the Super Draft. They were nice and loud, even though they were clearly outnumbered by the Union and DC United fans. But they right. definitely made their own. They definitely made some noise, and it was good to see the picks go over there and visit them and say hello and chat for a little bit. So I think it was a nice showing by the Revolution fans over at down in Baltimore.
That's good to hear, because you know, the one thing the Revs fans have gotten a lot of flack for is not making appearances at these kind of things, and it's not because, you know, it's inconvenient. Well, actually, it is because it's inconvenient. But it's, you know, these other fans, like down in New York, when they have it in New York, you know, Red Bull's there, Philadelphia's there. It's not not that hard for those guys to get there. And where was the Super Draft held the year before? Down in Baltimore as well?
DC? I think it was Philadelphia.
Philadelphia, you're right. It was Philadelphia. And I know that a couple of teams had organized buses to get down there, but the Revs were not one of those teams. But this year, you know, I guess it was a league effort to get more fan representation down there. So it was nice to see the Revs fans get there. But so the Revs went into the draft with some clear needs that they needed to address. And obviously, you know, there's been a lot of talk about the need for a striker and the need for, you know, a 15-goal scorer. Somebody's going to basically fill the role vacated by Taylor Twellman's retirement. But generally speaking, you're not going to find that type of player at the Super Draft. So, you know, the Revs, rightly so, I think, focusing on their back line, where they still had, even though they've signed Ryan Cochran in the offseason, and they've signed Didi Adomi, but they, that's a left back and a center back, but they're really kind of thin in the areas of center back and right back in terms of depth. So they addressed those, they addressed at least one of those needs with their first pick, AJ Sorzo. Who wants to talk about AJ?
Well, I first of all, I think I'm in agreement with you on that one, that a lot of people want to see them go attack in the draft, but I don't think you're going to find that guy who's going to really take your team on its back and score all those goals, 15 goals and or more in the Super Draft. Very rare. I mean, yeah, Taylor Twellman, I don't know who else in recent years has been able to do that out of the Super Draft. So I think they made the right decision, you know, going with the center back, and I think that was another area where they needed more depth. And Soares is a very, very smart player. Going into the combine, he was rated as the highest ranked center back just about anybody prior to the combine. He had not the best first day at the combine, but after that, he showed very well. And I think he's a guy that Steve Nichols and Mike Burns both see a lot of, you know, qualities of Michael Parker in him, and think he could be that smart defender back there. Maybe a, you know, ideal partner for Darius Barnes. Certainly a guy who communicates and talks a lot more back there than the recently released Emmanuel Ose. So I think he could be a great signing for the Revs at that center back spot.
So that's a piece of news I had not yet heard, is Emmanuel Ose has been released.
Yeah, just released today.
Well, that's interesting news. So that really, you know, it kind of shakes things out. And they've got three center backs sort of, you know, with Cochran, Barnes, and A.J. Soares now on the roster. And I was considering Ose kind of that right back slash center back kind of bench player, guy that can come in and fill a need there. Because as of right now, they still don't have any depth at the right back position. I mean, legitimate right back depth. They could, you know, patchwork it up with the squad that they have, unless they've got something else in the works. Is there something going on with a potential right back for the Revs that would, you know, give a little support to Kevin Alston and his sore hamstring?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, Hank. I think that's a question that only Mike Burns and Steve Nichols know at this point, because one thing that Mike Burns absolutely alluded to after the draft was that this was only what they addressed, that the players selected today was only what they were going for on the domestic market. They're still very much seeking additional players in the international market. And unfortunately, we don't have a nice tidy list of people that's available to us that they're looking at compared to how they drafted in the Super Draft. So, you know, my guess would be that they're certainly looking on the international market for a right back and some other positions, including a right midfielder, and maybe even a pair of forwards. So, they have three international roster spots open now. I think it makes it four with Ose now off the team. I don't know if he was international or if he had a green card, but I believe one thing that the Revs are certainly looking to do is to add some depth on the at right back, and I think they may address that during on the international transfer market or whoever else is available, you know, abroad.
That's an interesting move, I have to say. They must have something in the works, maybe for another international player, because, he was always kind of a flashy player, but not necessarily the most consistent player back there. You know, he went for a lot of crazy plays and did a lot of odd things for a center back. Not the composed center back that you'd like to see, just clear the ball out. He tended to play around in the back there, would try and dribble out of the back. And he did so, you know, with effectiveness. But, you know, I'm going to miss Emmanuel Ose. He definitely added a little variety to the back line, shall we say. I mean, it was always, you never knew what you were going to get, shall we say. It's like a box of chocolates. Sure. Box of chocolates. All right, so interesting news. So they've got, with AJ Soares coming in, and you mentioned the allusions to Michael Parker. You think maybe they're thinking 3-5-2? I know, Sean, you've definitely been thinking along that the midfield is set up for a 3-5-2. Is this going to, you know, facilitate a return there?
I mean, I'd like to think that it does. It's hard to say until we actually see him in camp whether he actually is that Michael Parker's player. I know Steve Nichol was definitely commenting on his intelligence and his ability to, you know, organize the defense as a leader back there, which is, you know, all the qualities that you need in that center guy and that three-man back line. And whether or not he actually is that guy, you won't know until the season starts. But you know, if he does turn out to be the guy who can coordinate the defense back there, it's definitely a possibility. And I wouldn't be surprised if Nichol did that, but I think that would be, you know, a great possibility for the Revs if he can actually organize and be a three-man back line.
Right, and it's kind of presumptuous of me to think that, you know, he's just going to, just because they drafted him in the first round with their first pick, sixth pick overall, it's a high pick, and the kid's obviously talented. He was the, you know, captain at UC Santa Barbara, right? Or UCLA? One of the two. And then I think he started every game that he appeared in. And I think while he was in college, not a bad record at all, considering. But like you said I think you wrote in your article today, Sean, I'm not sure when it came out, but out on NewEnglandSoccerToday.com. That's NESoccerToday.com. And you said, yeah, these guys are going to have to fight for their spots. And you're talking about AJ Soares going up against both Ryan Cochran, who's been around the league for 5 or 6 years now, and then Darius Barnes, who's in his third year as well. This is not going to be an easy starting position for him to attain. There's some depth there that he's going to have to work out and see if he can compete. Now, is there any chance that we might see, given Kevin Olsen's hamstring and the situation there, that, you know, this recurring problem, are any of these guys like Barnes or Cochran or even Soares capable of slotting in the right back in case Kevin Olsen goes down?
Well, I think we saw Barnes there actually for a little bit during a game last year, and he didn't look too comfortable there. Not so sure on Cochran. We haven't really seen him there in MLS, but that's a possibility. And Soares, couldn't tell you on that one, but that's definitely a key problem for the Reds. But and then again, you only have three center backs for two spots and a very injury-prone guy. So I think whatever happens, they're going to need more depth in that back line at both of those spots.
Right, right. And we can't forget also that, you know, they did recently acquire Didi Adomi. And they also still have Sestinovic at left back. It's really, the memory is still fresh in my mind where we saw Joseph Nayuki and Pat Phelan playing center back for the Revs last year. Not the stalwart center back pairing that you'd like to see for this team. That's for sure. But let's keep going in the draft. You know, they made some further acquisitions. They picked up another guy who was already signed by MLS, both AJ Soares and their second pick, Stephen McCarthy out of UNC, who both of them are going to, you know, jump right into the roster there because they have contracts from MLS already. They don't have to play for a contract like some of the other players on the team, like Boggs and Griffiths and Roberto Link. These guys basically have a spot on the roster. It's just a matter of whether or not they're going to start. Stephen McCarthy is central midfielder. He's 6'4". I was watching the interview with him and Jeff Lemieux last week, and the guy is a giant compared to, you know, look like Mutton Jeff, basically. So what can the Revs expect out of this guy? I know he's an attacking kind of player. He likes to... Or is he more of a box-to-box midfielder? He's not a true defensive midfielder, so to speak.
from what I saw, Hank, I mean, it's funny that you mentioned this, because that's the first thing that struck me. As soon as he came down from the podium and he met with the media, I just could not believe how tall he was. And granted, I'm not the tallest person myself. I'm probably around the same height as Jeff Lemieux, but that's the first thing that strikes me, is that this guy is almost perfect. I mean, physically, is almost perfectly suited for the exact type of player that the Revs need in midfield, and that's somebody who's going to win some balls. Some guy that, a player that, according to his rap sheet, is a guy that's got pretty good distribution, distributes the ball well, and obviously with the height, not only does the ball winning come into play, but it's also, he has the ability to kind of, create an issue in the midfield and pushing guys around if need be, a lot like Xavi Joseph. By no means am I comparing him to the next Xavi Joseph, but it's good to see a guy with his kind of stature, possibly paired up with Xavi, because it looks like between the two of them, both between 6'3 and 6'4, it looks like that's the type of player that, if he does pan out to what's projected of him, is a guy that can really kind of help bolster the Revolution midfield tremendously. Just looking at his stats, I mean, it's tough to really make any kind of forecast on him based upon, stats and what we've seen at the combine. But, he looks like he's a kind of a box-to-box defender. Central midfielder, I should say. He had 2 goals last year. His previous career high was 6, and that was when he was at Santa Clara. So, it's something that I think he's perhaps one of the most intriguing players, only because to me personally, he's not a ton is known about him. I'm a big fan of them taking Suarez at the sixth selection, but the pick that really intrigues me is McCarthy, just because of his size and just because he's almost he looks like exactly what the Revs need in the midfield, which is a tall, imposing presence, and it's something that they severely lacked last year.
Definitely, I have to agree. I mean, there's some serious. Well, also, you got to look who they were playing with. Ned. Joseph Nayuki starting the season with Xavi Joseph, and then Xavi immediately went out on that leave of absence for personal reasons. At least that's the team line. We all know what the real skinny is, but Xavi wasn't there, and you had Joseph Nayuki, Patrick Phelan. I mean, these guys clearly couldn't get the job done. It's amazing to me, actually, that Patrick Phelan's still with the team, considering the amount of people that they have the midfield position. Now, granted, one of these guys last year, Jason Griffiths, they were really high on him. They went out and they asked him to join the team early. He played in a couple of those exhibition games against one was Benfica, right?
And Cruzeiro.
And then so they went out and they got him and they brought him in. But it surprised me that he actually doesn't have a contract past this season. So he's last season rather. So he's got to actually basically go through tryouts again and see if he can win a spot on the roster. It adds a different dynamic there. With a 30-man roster plus the beginning back of the reserve league, you'd think that there's room on this roster now for 4 central midfielders. And I'm counting Pat Phelan and Jason Griffiths, along with Xavi Joseph and Stephen McCarthy. There's room here, I think, for all 4 of these guys to have a spot. But then you also have to add in the element of Marko Perovic and where he fits in with the team's plans. And Chris Tierney, they've just re-signed, who's proven to be a very versatile player. Played in 7 different positions for the team last year, which was crazy. But either he can play left mid, he can partner along with Xavi. If they go for a 3-5-2, they're definitely going to need more midfielders. So I think there's there's obviously a lot of questions still as to how this team is going to stack up on the field. I mean, we could talk about it on paper as much as we want, but the other glaring need, which I didn't see truly addressed in the draft, and maybe they're looking for international player in this spot, is a right midfielder to compete for that spot with Saini Nyasi. Because, frankly, Saini's had that spot by default for the last 2 years, just because there hasn't been anybody else that has been able to come in and fill that role. Is there somebody in the draft that, you know, the Revs may have picked up? I know that they picked up this kid, Kenny. And, you know, maybe he plays right mid, and then they got Zach Boggs last year, who's, again, competing for a roster spot, doesn't have a contract, so maybe he plays right mid. You know, where are the Revs going to find some of this depth that they need at right mid to really actually challenge Sandy Nyasi at that spot?
That's a good question. I think they need to go out and get a veteran out there to challenge for that spot, and also aid in Nyasi's development. I think you mentioned before the consistency of Nyasi's service just isn't good enough. Not something that needs to improve the Revs to have a successful season. But I think they need to really go out and find a veteran for that spot. Kenny's an interesting player. I actually talked to him and the coach today. I'm not sure he can play right mid. He looked decent at it in the bind, but I'm not sure that's. He's a Steve Nichol type right mid. I think he's more of a withdrawn forward in the Marko Perović type role if the Revs are to play him. But I really think that they got Boggs, who showed decently well there last year. He had a couple of good games. I don't know what can come from him. They have Burrow Link who can play there. But also, based on how little he played last year, I don't think he's going to be the answer in Steve Nichol's mind. So I think that's a place where they really should go out and find a proven guy to compete for that spot.
Yeah, I agree. And then, you know, in the third round, I mean, I was kind of disappointed that they didn't package up their third round draft picks and move up. We saw Houston, you know, made two excellent picks in the first round, I thought, and picked up the forward of my choice and Will Bruin, who I thought, you know, the Revs may have gone for. You know, maybe they didn't want to pick the sixth, pick him with number six overall. I think he went 10th overall or 11th overall. And, you know, I was kind of hoping that they would get a big target forward that's had some success at the college level. You know, Will Bruin's an imposing figure as well. Stephen McCarthy, Will Bruin, you know, you're looking at two really tall guys out there that, you know, may have partnered up pretty well in the but that's a partnership we're not going to be able to see. But they did make a number of acquisitions at the forward spot with Stephen Perry, who is out of Notre Dame. He's a six-footer, high jump champion. So, you know, hopefully he'll be good in the air. You got Ryan Kinney, who's you know, from Monmouth College, and Sean, I know you've seen a lot of those games because you know they play at the Bryant. They play against Bryant and in that division. And then, yep. And the other last guy was it Alan Koger?
Yep.
Yeah.
And, Mr. You know, basically Mr. Irrelevant for the Revolution, maybe. Who knows what this kid can bring? There's not a lot of news on him out there. Do you guys know anything about Alan Koger?
Well, they couldn't get in touch with him on draft day to tell him he's been drafted. So hopefully they've gotten in touch with him since then. But I know Brian did a little bit of research on, not too much out there, but I know Brian looked at him a little bit.
Yeah, from what I could find, I mean, he seems to be a guy that does score goals. You know, I remember when the Revs made the selection, I think a lot of us were scrambling to find out who this kid was because he wasn't profiled in the combine draft handy dandy draft book that kind of gave everybody's thumbnail sketch bios and stats, but. From what I found is that he did score 10 goals in 22 matches last year, scored a total of 29 goals in his 4 years at William & Mary, and you know, he redshirted his freshman year, so he really had kind of a 5 year. He was there 5 years, played four, so you know, a guy that I think is, you know, like you had said, Hank, as I think he's the perfect guy for the "quote unquote, Mr. Irrelevant selection," somebody that not a ton of people know about, but I think the Revs were you know, looking at a guy that maybe they saw something they liked and decided, hey, it's the last pick of the draft, why not take him? So obviously he must have done it. He must have shown the Revs front office something. And something that you had alluded to, Hank, as far as packaging the third round picks, I was kind of in favor of that myself. There was a rumor going around Superdraft saying that that there was potential interest on the Revs' behalf for a guy like Juan Pablo Angel. Whether or not that was actually based in any kind of truth. I think they certainly have three draft picks to at least package and send to LA for Angel. So, it's something that would have made the draft certainly a little bit more interesting on the Revolution perspective. But nonetheless, I think the Revs did exactly what they needed to in the third round, and that was stock up on forwards, because like you, I also felt that they maybe should have gone for Will Bruin with the sixth pick. But it's hard to argue with them taking a guy like Swords, especially in light of the fact that they've since waived Osei, and maybe that move was kind of in the back of their minds when they were taking Swords with the sixth pick. So, I think the third round really kind of was the form to really say, okay, we're going to address the four positions through the selections of Kenny, Perry, and Koger, and if these guys don't pan out, so be it. They're just third round picks. Not to obviously minimize them as players, but obviously your third round picks aren't your first choice picks, goes without saying. But I would have liked to have seen them package them as well, maybe for a seasoned veteran, from another team, like a guy like Angel, but nonetheless, even though they didn't, I do agree with the direction they went in, it taking three attack-minded players.
Right, and I'm just doing some back of the envelope stuff here, and those three players, maybe they, looking at this team right now, I forgot the goalkeepers here. There's room on this roster. As far as I can tell, maybe I'm missing a couple of people, but I'm counting maybe 24 current guys. If you count Boggs, Griffiths, Murray, and Link, maybe 23, 24. I don't, my math could be off, but I think there's definitely a lot of room here. You're talking with the Revs, they've got a 30 man roster now. They've got, I forgot. Shalosky. I forgot it's Shalosky and Dubé. So maybe up to 25. So there's a lot of I think there's room here for the Revs to go out and make a key acquisition. And that Juan Pablo Angel story really got a few feathers ruffled, shall we say. People's interest perked right up, and they were wondering if that was going to happen. Was that strictly a draft day deal, or was that something that may still happen further down the road?
Well, the news after that is that the Galaxy are now close to signing him. So I think based on that, kind of a dead deal, unless that was misinformation. But there have been a lot of reports the past couple of days since then that said the Galaxy are close to signing him. So it will be interesting to see what happens there. It could be something where the Revs were the next table over from the Galaxy, maybe. They mentioned it. That was it. And nothing ever came from it. But I think based on what we were hearing over the past 2 days, it doesn't sound like that's still a possibility.
Yeah, it would definitely be interesting to see where they're going to find this veteran presence that they'd sorely need. Because they did a good job last year. They brought in Marko Perovic and then Ilya Stolica, for the end of the season. I'm thinking that, they're definitely got to make some big name signing here. After the failure of last season, not making the playoffs, not scoring a lot of goals, in fact, scoring a league low and team low, record low number of goals. This the Revs just can't be happy with the way things are. So you'd hope that they're going to go out and make a key signing. Now, they've got a couple of international spots open. We've talked a little bit about that. They did use one of them for Didier Domi. Now, there's a guy. It's basically kind of the veteran presence that they basically had last year where they had Corey Gibbs, but for some reason they opted, maybe they had Domi in the back of their mind that they knew that he was coming this whole time, and so they knew that they could let Corey move on to another team. This is the kind of – I like this signing a lot. I'm going to let you guys talk about it in a second. But for me, it gives them a little bit more street cred. You know what I mean? It gives them that, we're serious now. We're gonna take we're really tapping into the free agent market. We're going to make some key acquisitions this year. We're going to start with Didier Domi, and we're just going to bolster up our back line, and we're going to move forward from there. What are you guys' thoughts on the Domi signing?
Crickets. Well, as far as Domi, I think that was – I agree with you. That was a big signing for them. I think they needed that veteran leader back there. I think, like you said, with Gibbs gone, they kind of lost that question whether or not maybe Barnes are also be able to step into that role. But I haven't seen it yet that they're going to be able to take that this early in their career. But I think he's a huge signing for the Revs. And people were happy with the way Sinova played at left back last year. I think he did a good job there. But now they have a Steve Nichol, obviously – didn't think he did a good enough job to lock down that spot based on the lineup decisions we saw at the end of the year. Domi is pretty clearly going to be the starting left back for the Revs this year. He has a veteran presence back there, someone who's going to be calm on the ball. And I think it's great that they have the security of a guy back there that played in the top leagues, played in the Champions League, played all over the world, and can help bring up some of the rest of this younger back line.
Yep. I think it's Brian, do you have anything to add there?
Yeah, I think it's like Sean had said. I think it's an area that they definitely need to address. I mean, if you look at the past few years, the Revs have always had a veteran bat in the back just to kind of stabilize all the young players. And I think last year it was Corey Gibbs. This year it's Domi, and obviously I think you get a lot more with Domi because he does have that international experience. So I think. It's probably the shrewdest move the Revs have made thus far this offseason. And I know that they haven't made a ton of moves. I know that they brought in Cochran, and they also selected Fred in the reentry process. And, it remains to be seen whether or not he stays in MLS or goes abroad. But I really do like the signing of Domi for the sheer fact that he, like you had said, he kind of not only does he bring some street cred, but I also think he also brings some impressive credentials also on the field, because this is a guy who, like Sean had said, played in the Champions League, played in the EPL. So I think anytime you get a guy like that and have him ready at the beginning of the season as opposed to middle of the season, I think it's win-win for everybody.
I agree, and I think it's like I said earlier. I think it's just a sign that they're taking this seriously now. They do have an expanded roster. They do have the reserve league. They can afford to take these kids in and let them play and get their minutes. And guys like Seth Sinovic, who was thrown into the front line last year, did a great job, I might add, and thought that he earned maybe that left back spot. Maybe deserved to play a little bit more than he did, but this is a learning curve for them, a learning curve for guys like Boggs, Sinovic, Shalosky, and this year we're going to have Soares, you're going to have McCarthy, maybe you're going to have Koger, Kinney, or Perry, but they do have this reserve league where these guys can go out now and get some good playing time and get a feel for what it's like to compete against the next level of players. Brent, it is the reserve, and it is still MLS. It's not, the Barclays Premiership Reserve League by any means. But the same time is, these guys are going to be playing on a more regular basis, not going to be focusing on school as well. It's a big step for these guys. I think that the Revs will probably end up keeping them unless they've got something up their sleeve, man, and I've got to go back through the roster again to make sure that I've got everybody. But I've counted 25 guys, so
I think they actually only have 19 actually signed right now.
Yes,
25 that are going to be in camp and 25 or 26 actually 26 that will be in camp competing for contracts. But I think they only have 19 actually signed at this point.
So there's definitely some room, and it remains to be seen how they're going to they're going to play this. I am, you know, just counting down the days to the start of the season. And, you know, home opener for the Revs in March, March 26th, I believe, same night as the United States men's national team against Argentina in New Jersey. Thank you, U.S. Soccer, for scheduling that game on the first, same day that the Revs, that the MLS is playing. That makes a lot of sense. But the upshot is that, you know, the window is closing now. I mean, the January transfer window in England, or in Europe, is, you know, 13 days away from closing. So if they want to get somebody out of the EPL or from Scotland or from, you know, another guy out of France any league really in Europe, they've got to do it quick, or these people are going to be locked up through January. I mean, through June, until the end of the season and July transfer window opens up again, which means they probably won't sign until August, right? So you look at this next, you know, 2 weeks is the real opportunity for the Revolution to really make a big splash in the free agent market. And, you know, if they don't take advantage of it, then it's, you know, everybody will go back to say, hey, it's same old Revs, same old Bob Kraft, same old, you know, Revolution front office. But, you know, I tend to think that they're taking this a little bit seriously now. I'm very hopeful that they're going to do that this season. So we'll see. What remains to be seen. Now let's just jump ahead till tomorrow, because tomorrow is the supplemental draft. And, you know, so the Revs get every team gets one pick per round. Is that the way this works?
It's actually already, because of the first round of the supplemental draft actually being what was originally the fourth round of the Super Draft, they made that change later. There's actually a few trades from that round, but the Revs weren't involved in any of them. So Revs do have a pick in each round, and a couple teams have moved around in the first round. But other than that, yeah, it's basically the way it goes.
Okay, so they'll probably get
sixth pick, 24th pick, and
yep.
Second pick.
Same thing like the other day. So we'll is there anybody out there? You know, is there anybody out there that the Revs are really wanted and you know, didn't grab? Or better question is, what were the real surprises from the draft of players that I know there were a few players that didn't get picked? That I think one guy was even signed by MLS and he didn't get picked. So is this?
There was a couple of the international players that. Uh-huh. MLS got from Ecuador and South America that actually weren't picked up, and it was the ones that had the pretty poor combines. Off the top of my head, I can't think of the names, but there were a couple of them that had pretty bad combines, unsurprisingly weren't picked up. But there were some other guys that was a bit surprising weren't picked up as well. A guy like Greg King from UConn was projected by some to go as high as the first round. He wasn't picked up. Another guy, Curtis Uchetto from University of Alabama, is a Canadian U23 international, also wasn't picked up. He was another guy that was touted highly by some guys. Michael Boxall, you know, another international from New Zealand, another guy expected to go as high as the first round, but wasn't taken. And you got Dan Keep Dartmouth from the midfield, a guy who actually had a very good combine, I thought, or at least a pretty solid combine. New Zealand international, got experience at New Zealand. Dartmouth also wasn't taken. Ashley McKines, who was on several people's pre-draft first round selection, the guy from Scotland, University of Tulsa, wasn't taken. So he's a guy that actually I think could help the Revs as a potential right midfield player. He's shown pretty well. And then JC Banks, who had a good combined show from the right midfield, that he can put pretty consistently quality crosses. Another guy, an American, that I think was definitely worth a look at from the Revs. So there's a lot of guys out there. And, you know, another guy I mentioned was Steve Beattie. Who would be kind of an interesting pick. He was the Division II Player of the Year in 2010. He scored 77 goals and 30 assists over 90 games. And his senior year had 26 goals and 16 assists in 25 games. Of course, that's Division II, so you can't read too much into it. But And he's a guy that I think would be a pretty interesting pickup from Ireland, who, you know, had offers for D1 schools going into college, but his SAT score stopped him doing that. It's interesting. He saw the article I put up today and sent a thing on Twitter saying that he would fit in really well with the Revs and would develop well under Steve Nichols. So he's a guy that would be, you know, an interesting pickup, certainly. And of the forwards available, I think he might actually be the best option, even though he's being a D2 guy. But there's definitely some talent out there. I think it was interesting to see the Revs go for a guy like Alan Kozier at the end of the Super Draft instead of some of these international guys that I think you could make an argument, you know, showed more in the combine and showed more in college. Well, of course, he wasn't in the combine, but I think these guys have probably shown more. But I think the Revs shied away from international players, you know, maybe because they're saving those spots for international signings. But now that they've gotten rid of Ose, you know, and they have 4 international spots open, you know, 3 if they end up signing Griffiths, and I think we might see them go for one of these guys. There's a lot of international guys out there that you can at least bring into camp, you know, and see if they're good enough to take up one of those international spots. And if they're not, you didn't really lose much by not signing them. So, you know, I think there's definitely, you know, more talent out there than you think for the 7-month draft.
Well, all right. So we're definitely looking forward to seeing that. We'll see what happens. It's like I said, it's tomorrow. We'll know by the end of the day if the Revs have made any moves on that front. It's really wide open. They definitely have some other, we've already talked about the spots on the roster, that, you know, they're going to have available. You know, maybe they pick up a guy like Boxall, who is, you know, a big imposing center back kind of guy, give him some runs in the, in the reserve league. You know, they definitely need a right midfielder. One thing about Saini Niasse's game is that, you know, he's gotten very predictable. he's really, really fast, and he can burn you if you catch him. But, you know, I think people are on to the fact that he's fast, and they're kind of covering that right side a little bit and really limiting his effectiveness. So who knows what they're going to do there. I think they need to – I think they could stand to even maybe put Niasse in a position where he has to actually work for that spot and get more out of him, because I'd like to see him contribute more to the offense for sure. All right, so that's basically it in terms of the drafts, and we've talked about the free agent market and who's out there. I mean, has Sean, has your buddy Alex been signed yet by anybody yet?
No, he hasn't. He's actually I've been keeping track on Twitter. He's, you know, somebody asked him. Several people have asked him. You know, obviously he's signed pre-contract. He hasn't signed anything yet. You know, he's still taking offers. Anything that's been reported is just speculation. But it is interesting that he is. You know, he's made it quite clear that he's available and, you know, accepting offers. So the guy that's out there on the market, whether or not he'd be interested in coming to New England, whether or not they'd offer him, you know, the amount of money that, you know, he would want, that's another story. But definitely a guy that's available.
Brian, do you have a pick out there on the free agent market, or maybe somebody who's you know, not getting any playing time with a team in Europe that you'd like to see come in MLS, maybe play for the Revs?
Well, I like Alex, Sean. I think he's a guy that would obviously provide a lot of spark and probably create a few more than his fair share of goals in a Revolution uniform if he were to come here. But one guy that I guess you know, could come here is not getting a ton of time, that I think would be a kind of a good signing, whether or not at least on the marketability front, and that's Nuno Gomes, and he's over in Portugal playing for Benfica, and you know, he's a guy that I think it has been rumored to go to the Revs simply because, you know, he's a right midfielder, attacking player, and obviously he's Portuguese. I mean, put those together and you got yourself a rumor. But at the same time, something that I mentioned to Sean when we were doing the recap was the fact that he's not getting a ton of minutes with Benfica. He's a guy that comes on the 84th, 85th minute, you know, plays 5 or 6 minutes and that's his game, and, you know, lives to fight another day. But, you know, so I really don't know how fit he is or how many minutes he can give you. I think he's on the wrong side of 30. I think he's 31 and 32. And, you know, would I like to see him play for the Revs? You know, of course I would. But, you know, because I think he does bring that veteran experience that the team desperately lacks on the right in the midfield. But at the same time, is he worth DPA money? Is he worth giving him? Is he worth, you know, shelling out more than say $500,000 for? I don't know. I'm kind of undecided on that. If they, but if hey, if they can get him for, you know, Taylor Twellman money, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of $430,000, easy for me to say. Then yeah, I say the Revs do bring him in, but aside from that, you know, I'd like to. Then this is just a shot in the dark, and if it starts a rumor, awesome, that's great. If it leads to him coming here, that's great. Is a striker named Liadsen, and he plays for Sporting Lisbon, and he's a guy that is just completely. I mean, he's probably one of the best strikers I think in the Portuguese league. A guy who also plays for the Portuguese national team. I think he's 31. Can do it all. I mean, he's good in the air, good with the ball at his feet. Creates a lot of gets a lot of space. Great finisher. Will he come to the Revs? Probably not. Yeah. Like I said, just dreaming here. But in the off chance that somehow, you know, he becomes suddenly disgruntled with the team he's been for the past 5 or 6 years and decides to come to the States and play in MLS to prove a point or something, he'd be the guy that I'd want to see the Revs pursue. So, again, I'd like to see Nuno Gomes here. That'd be great. If not, I'd love to see Leeds and come to New England and score a bushel full of goals for the Revs.
Yeah, well, it's clear that they definitely need somebody to score a bunch of goals. It's you know, like we said, and we kind of beaten it to death, but you know, not a lot of guys can just come in out of the draft and, like Taylor Twellman did all those years ago and put up the numbers that he did. All those years ago, and it's hasn't happened since. Really, you look at guys that they're kind of streaky. They go through ups and downs, you know, peaks and valleys. And guys like Wayne Rooney in Europe, you know, he was Footballer of the Year a couple years ago, and he's not scoring anything right now. And you know, you're not going to find a guy on the street who's going to be able to, you know, put in 20 goals for you. You know, he's a wanted commodity, not just by MLS, but by teams all around the world. So, you're going to be competing with everybody else out there to bring this guy in. It's going to be somebody who wants to come back to America, wants to play for New England, wants to, you know, maybe MLS is his best shot. You know, I always think of like, and it probably won't happen. I think he's actually signed with, Birmingham or somebody, but like Robbie Keane, yeah, somebody who's not getting a lot of playing time in England or in Scotland or wherever, but he, you know, definitely still has something in the tank. And you know, if he was playing in the Championship, he'd probably be starting. But because he's playing in the Premiership, he's on the bench quite a bit. So I think that a guy like that could really succeed in MLS and really stand out. Will he be willing to do that? He'd probably have to take a pay cut. I don't know if he'd want to do that. So, anyway, time to wrap things up here because I'm getting paged for dinner. But the upshot is that the Revs have some work to do. They're going to have a supplemental draft, and then they've got to get out there in the free agent market, and they really got to take it to the next level and bring in some veteran leadership and also find a real goal scorer. Something that can really turn this season around, because if they don't, it's going to be more the same as we had last year. So what do you guys got going on now? I know you've got your own podcast now, which we have to have a little chat about, because obviously I feel like the jilted the fifth wheel here now. But talk to me about what's going on in New England soccer today.
Well, I've got an article on just an opinion piece on the waiving of Manuel Ose, and I think you know, I think the biggest downfall behind his departure is just the fact that he just wasn't much of a communicator, and it's something that I'll allude to in my article. You know, so I know that's on my end, and I'm going to defer to Sean because I know he's probably got something coming up on the supplemental draft.
Yeah, we'll be covering the supplemental draft tomorrow, but what I'm working on tonight, actually, and tomorrow is a piece on Ryan Kinney, as we mentioned before. I talked to his coach and him, and it was interesting to find out what type of player he is. Coach had a lot of good things about him. He sounds like a very offensively aware. If you can look at some of his highlights on YouTube, he's a guy that tries things you don't expect out of college players, especially out of American college players. He said as his freshman, he scored a great goal from way out, chipping the goalkeeper and stuff you don't expect to see out of players their freshman year. And he's not going to be the target guy if that's what the Reds are looking at. But he's a guy that has deceptive pace and is pretty creative. I think he showed it in the combine that he's got a lot of good offensive awareness going forward. So it'll be interesting to see what he can do for the Revs, and I'll be writing a little bit more about him. Of course, he was a Revs fan growing up too, so I thought it was a plus.
There you go. Play for the hometown team, man. I think what you guys are doing is great. New England Soccer Today seems to be really taking off, so good for you guys for making that happen. It's excellent stuff. I'm going to start a rumor. I'm going to start a rumor right now. Charlie Davies to the Revolution.
That's funny you mentioned that, Hank, because I actually wrote something about that last month as far as like some sort of transfer or something that the Revs could possibly work out, because, you know, just as I'm sure you're thinking as well, is the fact that he's from around here. He's from New Hampshire, played at BC, and his name is certainly familiar around Gillette Stadium after the showing he put on against the Revs during an exhibition in 2006 when BC came in and got a scrimmage together with the Revs, and he just the bicycle kick that he unleashed is still talked about to this day around Gillette Stadium. So you and I are the same mind. I think a guy like Charlie Davies, I think the situation for him, if the Revs were to kind of get him maybe on a short term loan, and you know, he comes in here, he works, you know, it's almost a given that he'll probably be given the upper hand as far as one of the striker positions goes. And you know, I just think it's one of those situations that it's such a perfect situation that it's almost too good to be true. And obviously it would obviously involve Charlie Davies, you know, whether or not he's willing to accept a loan to MLS. You know, as we know, he bypassed MLS completely to go abroad. Whether or not he's receptive to coming to MLS, even if it's for a short loan, is something that I don't think many of us know at this point. But I too would love to see Charlie Davies come back here, even if it's only until maybe August or September, until League One starts up again. I think that'd be a perfect fit for everyone.
Yeah, and you know, we got to remember when he was coming through, he was entertaining. He was getting offers from teams in Sweden and whatnot, you know, at a lot more money than MLS was willing to pay for him. I mean, MLS was not about to spend that much money on an American college player at that time. It's a different league now, right? It's they're now, you know, they're going out, they're trying to get these guys in college, and you know, I think Charlie's proven himself on the at the highest level possible, but you know, unfortunately, with his accident and his recovery and his return to form has not led him to be the you know, to the starting position at Sochaux. I think the opportunity for him to come back and work in the States, if you know, Sochaux was willing to let him do that, that you know, might be a good move for him. You know, get his touch back, get his speed back, put it all together here, and then maybe return to Europe next year, like you said. All right, but let's wrap things up for this week. We'll find out more about the supplemental draft. Are you gonna do the live blog again, Sean, or are you just gonna kind of do a?
Well, if there was a way to do it, I would do it. But I think if there's a way to listen to the conference call, I would definitely do it. But I don't, none that I'm aware of. So I think it's just gonna be all post draft coverage from our end. I wish we could do it, but doesn't seem possible.
Yeah, I think that's probably the way to do it. They tried to do that in the reentry draft, and it just did not work very well at all. So, the league's just, you know, we'll probably just have the conference call and then be done with it, and we'll find out tomorrow. So be sure to check out NewEnglandSoccerToday.com. That's NESoccerToday.com. Find out what happens in the MLS draft, the supplemental draft, tomorrow. And thank everybody for listening. I want to thank Sean and Brian for coming on once again, and we'll talk to you guys soon.
Thanks for having us, Hank.
You're welcome. Thank you. Cheers, guys. Still get you uptight.
Well, there's nothing better you ain't tried to fill the emptiness inside. When you come back down, girl, still ain't feeling right. Don't it seem like hits just keep getting harder to find? And all your hits ain't bringing you peace of mind. Before you find out it's too late, girl, you better get straight. No, but not with kicks. You just need help, girl. Well, you think you're gonna find yourself a little piece of heaven?